session number 20144, Reel 4.
I'm going Reel 4.
This is A Company's task. We followed the barrage up 3 or 4 times with the orange smoke. And then it lifted. And there was a lot of shells falling amongst us. We never knew whether it was our barrage firing short or the enemy firing back. But those are the usual cry. Stretcher bearers. Stretcher bearers. All of a sudden, there was a big dip in front of us. And a big minefield right up the edge of the forest that was jutting out in front of us. And they were hanging on the wire. There were signs, skull and crossbones, Actung Mining. Now this stopped us in our track. We all stopped and looked back actually. And there was one of the tanks on fire behind us. And there was a hell of a lot of activity behind us. Of course, the inevitable stretcher bearers. Now we didn't, in our minds, we didn't know what to do next. And Sergeant Rose, MM, he was a great leader, Sergeant Rose. He shouted in his Scots language, "Get yourself spread out or you all get effing killed." And he stepped over the wire into the minefield. And we all followed. We picked our way over the minefield. The mines were on top. It was anti-tank mines. So if we had set off one of them, there would have been a hell of a better explosion. There was a lot of activity going on around us. But all the thing that was in our mind, or my mind, was stepping over these mines. And we reached the other side of the minefield without a casualty in our section. I don't know how the other sections got on. We spread out. The artillery barrages stopped now. So we fired our Brens into the edge of the ricehole forest. And firing rifles from the hip, we put an attack into them on the top of the hill. Halfway up the hill, there was a little farmhouse. Rifleman Davis went in around, and all of a sudden he come running out, and with instinct we all run after him and ended up in a heap up against the wall. There was an explosion. He had threw an hand grenade in the house, and it had been fortified. Someone had put chicken wire up to the window, and the grenade come back at him. That's why he ran. So that was another lesson we learned. But we never used to let Rifleman Davis throw a grenade again, unless we could help it. We reached the top of the hill, sorted ourselves out. The tanks had pulled up on our right and they were cooking their food. They always seemed to be cooking when they stopped, and there was us there looking back. You could see to our right was big flooded plains where the Germans had opened up the dams and flooded the country. And there was the Canadians crossing in amphibious boats, putting in an assault. And further back still, there was a road packed with vehicles. We stayed there the night. Late, it was before our stew and tea come up. We settled in for the night, the middle of the night, get dressed, and we moved to a hill overlooking Cleve. And the battle was going on for Cleve down below. The next morning we moved into Cleve, which had been completely flattened, and they had bulldozed a road through it. And the in amongst the rubble, there was the things of the battle that they fought. There was Bren gun carriers with rubble heaped on them. We moved right through the far side of the far side of Cleve to stay the night in some of the less bombed houses, which was the only ones that had their roofs off. They're about three stories high. We moved into a cellar. We chucked out all the household stuff and moved into a cellar. And the incident here that I must relate, when we settled down, we went around and had a look around, and there was a big factory there with all brand new shoes, hundreds of brand new shoes. And the only thing that wasn't broken was a big glass clock. So my mate Grant picked up a brand new shoe and broke the glass, chucked it and broke the glass, and it fitted into the scenery more now. After we got back to the billet, I decided to go to tend to nature. So I took my spade. Oh, there was a battery of artillery up the road, firing away, 25 pounders, firing at a target, on seeing target, they were banging away. So I took my spade, lit a cigarette, going up to what looked like a chicken run, was going to dig a hole, made sure I had plenty of sanitary paper, which an infantryman always carries, plenty of sanitary paper, intending to dig a hole and do the necessary. Halfway up the garden, a German plane appeared from nowhere, dropped a bomb on these artillery pieces and silenced them. Then our planes arrived and there was a dogfight. And a German plane came right overhead with the smoke pouring out of them and crashed further into the town. And the pilot was floating down on a parachute. You could clearly see him. So he probably landed in the road next door to us. I thought about going after him. But I decided that the mission I was on to go and tend to nature was more important than going after this pilot. So I carried on and went up to what I was doing. In the night, it rained and rained and rained. No food could get up to us. So our hardtack biscuits come in handy in our pocket. And ironically enough, we never had any water in our water bottles. And the water cart couldn't get to us because it was stuck in the mud somewhere in the rain. So we caught the water that was coming off the roofs. And we had little Tommy cookers. We brewed ourselves some tea. We always used to carry a tin of mixed sugar, powdered milk, and tea. The quartermaster always used to give us like a 50 cigarette tin with it in. So we popped a sterilizing tablet in it and brewed ourselves tea. And I always remember it because the bottom of the mess tin was full of grit from the roofs. The order came to fall in again, get dressed, fall in, and they issued us with all issued with tracer bullets, which we hadn't been issued, riflemen never issued with them before. And this told us something. They came in very handy for the woods that we were going in the dark woods, as it turned out. Some of us had found umbrellas in the cellars, and we stood out in line with these umbrellas. Sergeant Major Smith came down the line and made us throw them away. He said, "You look like a lot of Chinese coolies," he said, stood up. We moved out of Cleve. Our section was leading to what they call advance to contact. Now, this is not a very nice place to be, out in front and advance of contact, in case the enemy contact you first. We went down a road, tree-lined road, and from across the river Rhine, They started shelling. So we all took refuge in the little house. Sergeant Rose shouted at us to get back on the road and keep moving. And the usual cry was stretcher bearers. We moved on and went around a corner, and there was about three cottages there. And there was two Germans just coming out to get on their bicycles. So we all fired at them, and they moved back in the house. And they must have moved out the back. We never seen them again. But down the cellar, there must have been about six, eight Germans, badly wounded with their legs off. And the stink was terrific down there. And their bandages looked filthy. But of course, there's nothing to do with us. We had to keep moving. So we just left them. Moved around the corner, and there was one of our small reconnaissance tanks on fire. That was the last thing of the enemy before us, apparently. Or I should think. We looked up the road, and it was a long straight road. And on the top was a woods. Now this turned out to be what Moreland Woods, which was to be a sad place for a company. We moved up on along the road to make contact, and all of a sudden a smoke screen was thrown out higher up the road, and a vehicle dashed out and dashed up the road. One of our tanks fired at it from behind us, nearly lifting our steel helmets off. He must have fired near enough on it. And the vehicle got away, went over the brow of the hill. We moved up the side of the woods, dug in case the fireworks started. You always dug in, first thing, dig in. We were there for a couple hours. And we were ordered, our section was ordered to move up through the woods. There was a gap in front of the woods, like a fire gap. And find out reconnaissance up through the side of the wood to see what was there. We went up through, and there was a bunker there. We opened the window, and Corporal Grant fired a burst of Sten gun in there. And there must have been about 16 to 18 fully armed Germans coming out of there. Fully equipped they were. We fired some bullets in the air. There was only six of us. We fired in the air to make them show we meant business, and took off their steel helmets and sent them to the rear. This was the thing we seemed to be doing now. We never collected prisoners if we could help it. We just sent them to the rear to let the other people pick them up. We moved on up through the side of the woods and lay on the edge of the woods. And all of a sudden, a German soldier come walking out through the woods, through the gap. Corporal Grant said, one man fire at him, like, you know, and it turned out to be me. I had to fire at him. So I took aim, put all my training into practice. He must have been about 200 yards. Because his aft eyes, the front sight on your rifle. And they said that's about 400 yards if he's as tall as that sight. So he was half as tall, about 200 yards. I set my sights and fired. He dropped like a sack of spuds. Good shot, they said. That was a good shot, because that was a first class shot, actually. And then it suddenly dawned on me, that was my first real kill. And real good thoughts never went through my mind, you know, because he was somebody's relation after all. Either. So I wasn't proud of my kill. After about 10 minutes, this German soldier got up, bent forward, holding his arm, and he run down through the gap. We all fired at him, and he sort of zigzagged. And there was a German position further up the road, and he got to that. So I was grateful, really, that he got up and run away, in a way, in my own mind. We got back to our slit trench on the edge of the woods. And all of a sudden, a carrier came from behind us with a quartermaster sergeant stood up in front, a Cameroonian. It must have been the rations for one of the other companies. He went up the road, and we watched him being taken prisoner about 400 yards in front of us. We stayed in that slit trench for a while, and all of a sudden a great big tank, one of our tanks, came up the road behind us. Now, in training, they said a tank could go over a slit trench and not arm you. But we weren't about to prove it. So we got ready to move out. Now, this wasn't a very good position to be in front of a tank, in case the enemy started firing at the tank. And much to our relief, we pulled back and dug in on the other side of the road further back. It was getting dim, so we had the food to come up. We had our stew, which always went in well, the stew and tea. And the mess tin always tasted of the stew the day before, because we never washed them out proper on the front line. And we settled in for the night. There was a white a cottage up in front, a thatch cottage. And there was a white flag had come out of there earlier in the day, and a family of children, the old family, had moved out and went through our line, civilians. Sergeant Rose fired a tracer bullets into the roof of the thatch cottage, and it lit up the night. Clearly, they kept the road lit up. We settled in for the night. But it wasn't to be about 11 o'clock in the evening. 2300 hours. Get dressed. And we moved into the woods. As black as ink in there. We kept as close as we could, so as not to lose contact. But we did lose contact with the leading platoon. So we stopped. And all of a sudden somebody shouted, "Grenade, grenade, throw a grenade," up in front of us. Which is a silly thing with all the trees around. And there was a hell of a lot of firing up there. So they come to the high ground, which apparently was our objective, further in the woods. It was higher ground, and we went up, reached the leading platoon and dug in. A sergeant, myself, and another, Rockman Baker, the one that told the jokes back in Nijmegen. He was to be fatally wounded when we crossed the Rhine, but unbeknown to him now. We had to patrol out in front, cross this here gap, into the woods, and make a reconnaissance. Now, we knew there was a lot of Germans out there. So we crawled out to the woods, and much to my relief, the sergeant thought the same as me, that it would be fatal to go into them woods. Survival's the name of the game, remember? So we laid up for about probably a half hour, which is the longest half hour of my life. And he told us what he was going to report when he went back, in case we got asked. We went back, and the following morning, there was a lot of movement on our right during the night, apparently. It was like a load of deers moving through the woods or something. The following morning, we left one platoon to clear up the woods down to the road on our right, where all the movement was. And the other two platoons was to move across the gap into the woods opposite. We were the second platoon. The leading platoon went off, the one platoon in front of us, went into the woods, and all of a sudden, all hell was let loose. We all hit the ground. And a corporal, there were several men dashed back through the woods and took up positions beside us. Well, the leading platoon, what was left of them. And an officer shouted to a lance corporal, I forget his name now, in the leading platoon. He said, Corporal, he said, why aren't you with your section? And the corporal answered him in very strong words, I ain't got no effing section, he said, they're all taken prisoner or killed. We lay there, and the Germans were shouting to us, come in, Tommy, put your hands up, we can see you, hands up, Tommy, come in. Major Shearer was just across from us, and he shouted for Lance, for Corporal Jackman. Now, Corporal Jackman had been with us since Normandy, and his leave was due in 2 days' time, or thereabouts, and he said he shouldn't have been in this attack because of his leave, because I slept next to him back in Normandy. He was on my left. I could have put my hand back and touched him. And the major was shouting for him, so he got up onto his arms, pushed his arms to get up, and bang. There was a look of dismay on his face. And he must have been shot right through the head, I should think. Face. I never looked again. Because these sort of things, you don't look. You get the picture and you don't look again. They were still shouting for us to come in. And Major Shearer, and a rifleman from the platoon that was behind us, clearing the woods. There was a lot of commotion going on back there. Shouted to the major, he said, I think it was 8 platoon. 8 platoons being counterattacked, sir. And Shearer said, so am I. And he said, back to our old positions. And we all made a dash and got back to our old positions. The casualty we had in our section was a man shot in the bum, funny enough, when we retreated. We got back to our old section, and it was the only time that I seen boxes of ammunition all over the place. It was obvious that we were going to stay there and stay there. We were ordered to fire on the enemy to our right, and the old company opened fire. For all that was left of us, about 9 Bren guns and about 50 rifles. And all of a sudden, the order ceased firing, stopped firing. Or stop, that's right, stop. It always says stop, not cease. Stop. And from our front came racing down, firing two of our carriers. And they were equipped with flamethrowers. They had big tanks on the back. And they burnt the Jerrys out. Just burnt them. They had not recovered from our fire. And they burnt them. You could see them running from their trenches on fire and being shot down. Now, somebody had took 3 prisoners next door trench in a little gully. I don't know who took them because we weren't taking prisoners really in this close fighting. And one of them was wounded in the leg. And his leg was so swollen that all the stitches had come out of the seam of his trousers was ripped right up through where his leg was swollen out. We gave him a cigarette each. And as time went by, I was ordered to take the prisoners back to battalion headquarters through the woods. So we started back. The wounded German, they put on a branch and carried between them. Further back, we picked up another stretcher with the wounded man on, and the Germans carried some more Germans carrying it. We went back through the woods, and there was a battalion of Canadians, because this was supposed to be a Canadian do. We were on loan to the Canadian Army, apparently, which we learned after. We went out of the woods, and there was a jeep waiting, first grade jeep. So we put our wounded German on one stretcher, and our wounded comrade on the other stretcher. The rifleman and his enemy on the same stretchers, on the same jeep, and they raced off back the road. I took the other prisoners and found headquarters, which was in a bungalow further back the road, and there was about 20, 30 other prisoners there. So I added my prisoners to them. And the thing to do then was to take the watches off the prisoners. I'd already had two off the three prisoners I took back. So I had three watches now. I asked the other Germans for their watches, and one of them said to me, in plain English, "I have only one watch," he said. They'd probably all been taken from them. Now I thought to myself, I'll get back to the company. And the RSM appeared from around the corner and said, ordered me to take them back to brigade. So you always obey the last order, I suppose. I didn't expect this. So I started off up the road. The road was being shelled behind us. So I set him off at a quick pace. Snail it was, in German. Snail. And they was pleased to run out of it, same as me. I followed the brigade signs back to brigade headquarters. Handed over the prisoners. They put them in a big chicken cage with others. I was just about to go back to the company, and there was a queue for food. The brigade troops there with their mess tins. So I soon joined them. And I remember the meal was pork chops, peas, mashed potatoes, and a peach and custard. Now this was nothing like the grub we were getting. So I joined them, no questions asked. Now it was getting late. So I decided to stay the night. And I found a room with four beds in it, iron beds. Three of them was occupied by signal men, and the other one was just a spring, so I slept on the bed, on the springs. Next morning I went in to breakfast, and the sergeant started asking questions. So I thought, well, what should be done here for eating another man's rations? Because brigade was made up of all the regiments of the brigade. So I set off out through the door, intending to go back to the company. And it suddenly dawned on me, I'm not going back in them woods. The only way, what they used to do with the dead comrades, they'd leave them on the road and put a gas cable over them, with their boots sticking at the bottom. And I thought, that's the way I'm going to end up in there. When I had left the company, there was a sergeant from the platoon that had cleared the woods out there dead. Sergeant Tate, I think he was called. Three riflemen out there dead. The dead Germans that had been burned.